Welcome to The Art Scene, presented each week by UA Little Rock Public Radio. 2 weeks ago, the Arkansas Symphony's music director, Philip Mann, waxed eloquent with information on the 1718 Masterwork season. Today, he is rhapsodic over the chamber music series. From the start, when I asked about the musicians' suggestions.
We had more requests this year from musicians than any year prior. And I think that speaks to how engaged the musicians are, how many ideas are coming out of our successful programming history now. And I'm finding that a lot of the musicians that have maybe been a little bit reticent in the past to offer some suggestions now are feeling very open and free with it. So it's just a matter of trying to choose a few things from a pile of great ideas.
So the first one is with the artist of distinction. And it was last year as well, I think. Isn't that the way the River Rhapsody started last year?
That's right. I think it's purely a coincidence that the seasons ended up laying out that way. But we're opening the season with our Artist of Distinction, and we're also having a selection of our Composer of the Year represented on this program as well. So we really start off with a bang, if you will. And I think if you look at the season as a whole, we've really kind of hit our stride with this series. We understand what our audiences have been responding to, what the musicians are requesting, and it seems to be a really nice balance of three things. The first would be just great masterpieces of the chamber music repertoire, but then also lesser-known gems of the chamber music repertoire that musicians want to share. The third group would be works that aren't as well-known, perhaps works of living composers that allow us to hear the great masterpieces with fresh and new ears. And the mixture that we've been able to come up with, I think, over the last couple of seasons has been just a really nice balance. And you'll see some of that on this first program. We've got Schoenberg, I should say, because he's from L.A. and he's American, so he says Schoenberg, his Winter Music, which is a very short 7-minute work for wind quintet. It was commissioned by the Quintet of the Americas and premiered in 2012, and it's just kind of a little gem, delightful little bonbon of a piece that kind of celebrates the sound and blend of the wind quintet. Adam is our Composer of the Year, and on the first Masterworks program, we'll have a piece called Go, and it's kind of the opposite sensibility of Go. Go is a rip-roaring, fast-paced race that depicts an actual physical race, narrative of a race in the music. And Winter Music is much more melancholic. It has the colors of winter, the coldness and the kind of affect that one would expect from the notion of winter. To kind of warm that up a little bit, and in juxtaposition, we've put an arrangement by the flutist Valerie Coleman. She's also a composer, and your listeners may remember her as a member of the Imani Winds, who have come here to Little Rock in the past, and it's an arrangement of the traditional spiritual Steal Away for that same wind quintet ensemble. And following up with that, we have solo selections that will be to be announced by Jennifer Frauci, our fantastic artist of distinction. She's a wonderful violinist. I've enjoyed collaborating with her in the past. She's got incredible chops and virtuosity, but also a real depth of musicianship and kind of a facility with different repertoires that is really rare to see. Somebody that can really, that's almost omnivorous as a musician. And she's going to be presenting, perhaps it may be some selections of solo Bach or Isaiah, but some things just for solo violin. And the last piece on the program will be familiar to many of your listeners, and that's Tchaikovsky's Souvenir de Florence. And it has kind of a decidedly Italian flair to it. Although, if you really listen to it, you wonder how much he really picked up in his shopping in Florence. It has a sensibility of kind of joy and of exuberance and of maybe vacation and triumph. And part of that, I think, comes from where Tchaikovsky was in his life at the time. He was a huge celebrity.
As a chamber work, how many members of the public play it?
It's six musicians. It's two violins, two violas, and two cellos. And Jennifer Frauci, our artist of distinction, will be one of the violinists in that ensemble. One of the really special things for me as a programmer or as a music director is to bring in these well-established, well-known guest artists that have something very powerful to offer musically, and then to put them in the intimate setting of a chamber music ensemble with our star musicians. And to see the collaboration and how the filtering of great ideas and that kind of infectiousness of great musicianship, it really benefits the orchestra as a whole. And it's a huge priority for me that we continue that kind of thing.
So what have you got this time, the second one after the Artist of Distinction, a dance?
This is really a program of dance and dazzling fire and virtuosity and just tremendous energy. It begins with the Spanish composer Sarasate's Navarra, which is a Spanish dance for just two violins. It's an unconventional ensemble. You don't think of very many works written for just two violins. And it's a very violinistic work. Of course, Sarasate is known for writing big virtuoso showpieces for violinists, and this was specifically a musician request, and it'll allow some people to show off their violin chops. It's particularly because of the interesting kind of connections between Spanish and French harmonic and compositional language in the 19th and 20th century, which we follow up with the Saint-Saëns Violin Sonata number 1, Opus 75. This is a large work. It's a dazzling showpiece for both the pianist and the violinist. And the work really follows up on Saint-Saëns as an emerging composer that is showing himself to be one of the great geniuses in French compositional history. He was also known at the time really for being a champion of some unpopular composers that we are beloved now. Schumann, Wagner, and Liszt were three composers that he really introduced to the French public, especially in Paris, as being something worthy of everyone's attention. So Saint-Saëns, not just as a great composer, but as a programmer and as an advocate of other of composers, really made a big impact on our perception of French music, and then also the French public's reception of some big composers like Schumann, Wagner, and Liszt. Now, we go from Sarasate and Saint-Saëns to somebody lesser known, but also very adept and almost prodigious in his talent. And it's the young composer Jefferson Friedman. He wrote his String Quartet No. 2, which is the work that you'll be hearing one of our quartets play. And it was commissioned by the Chiara Quartet, and it won the 2000 ASCAP Leo Kaplan Award and also won the 2000 BMI Student Composer Award. So it really was a student composition written at Juilliard. But when you hear it, it's a mature work. It's an incredibly vigorous work. It's got this powerful rhythmic energy and this churning mechanistic, almost wild fervor. So it's a work that it comes as a request of our musicians, and I can't wait to hear it.
Let's have a little bit more about Arensky. He's not a sort of name in lights half the time, is it?
No, but if you speak to musicologists, and particularly people who have grown up in the Russian school or in Eastern European conservatories, people know of Arensky as one of the great nationalistic Russian composers. He was a student of Tchaikovsky, a huge devotee of Tchaikovsky's compositional style, of his language, of his role in Russian musical history, but would also really track his lineage back to Mussorgsky and then beyond Mussorgsky to people like Beethoven. So he's really a well-known Russian composer that in certain circles would be considered really amongst the very core of the canon of Russian nationalistic composers. The work that you're going to hear on this program, his quartet for violin, viola, and two cellos, which is an interesting combination, is actually a direct connection to Tchaikovsky and his own lineage. In fact, it's an homage to his mentor, Tchaikovsky. The first movement is a tender, passionate movement that opens and closes in nationalistic Russian fashion with an Orthodox theme. It's an Orthodox psalm theme that is written into the first movement's structure. And then as we kind of continue through the work, we find that in the second movement, the theme is borrowed or stolen or at least dedicated to Tchaikovsky, because it's from Legend, which is Opus 54 of Tchaikovsky's Children's Songs. And then when we finally get to the finale, it's actually pretty unusual. It's got an opening theme that when you wouldn't expect to find a Russian funeral mass theme to begin a finale of a quartet, but that's exactly what it is. And it's associated with the coronation and majesty of the Tsar. This theme was actually previously used by Beethoven in his quartet, Opus 59, number 2. And also it was used by Mussorgsky and Boris Godunov. So both of those names should sound familiar because Arensky owed his lineage to those two other composers. So your question is actually very apropos and timely, because this is a way we can get to know Arensky, because this piece in many ways is a snapshot of his personal influences as a composer. This is a work that was requested by our musicians as well. It's very easy to love. It's very melodious. It's catchy. And it has some of the best attributes that one might hear from Tchaikovsky, but in a slightly different voice. And that's being balanced by another nationalistic composer from a different style, and that's of Dvorak. And now, of course, Dvorak has this great Czech nationalist voice, but at the time that he wrote his quartet number 13 in G major, he had already spent his time in America. In fact, it was at the tail end of his 3 years serving as the dean of the conservatory in New York that he was really, I think this was about 1894, he was really undergoing some tremendous homesickness. And he manages to go back for a summer. And then in 1895, he returns again, and he just can't bring himself to return to the New World, and he stays in the Czech Republic. This work was one of the first works that he was able to pen after his return to his homeland. And I think that's important to note, because when he returned to his homeland, he went through a debilitating a period of writer's block. He couldn't seem to bring himself to write anything. And then in a furious moment, in just a few weeks, he penned several important works. And this the G major quartet is one of the most beloved by quartets. They love to play it. It has an interesting kind of structure that highlights the relationships between like the second violin and the viola and the cello and the viola and things like this that aren't necessarily traditional or conventional, where you might expect it to be the first violin and the cello, or like accompaniment and melody. And it's this kind of interesting juxtaposition of these unconventional relationships within the quartet that are highlighted that makes it such a beloved piece by quartet members, because they get to play with the people in their quartet that they don't always get to play with. And that was just 1 year following his departure from New York. Another thing to know about it is that he plays with our expectations a little bit in this piece. I mean, not only by highlighting those strange relationships within the quartet, in the third movement, the scherzo and trio, he gives us a kind of galloping, walloping scherzo, but then he gives you a trio that doesn't turn out to be the trio. It's a false trio, and he brings you along a path, and then once he has you hooked in where you think you know where you are, he subverts it and then gives you the real trio, and you realize where you thought you were, you weren't. And that's it. I think it gives us a little bit of a sense of his sense of humor and how he, as a great showman, I think, of a composer, especially you see this in his symphonies, he knows how to take expectations and then play with them. It's those surprises that he can offer that give you some of those great moments of spectacle.
My guest is Philip Mann, Arkansas Symphony's music director. The topic, 1718 River Rhapsodies. Okay, so the next one, parlor music. Now, what's the twist there?
I'm not sure whose description that really is of parlor music. Certainly something of the salon might make sense here, particularly with the French connection of the cross. But the Mozart divertimento perhaps would be more akin in a parlor-type room. This program has three works that, again, were all requested by the musicians. And I think it's the flavor of the three works in combination that makes this program work so well. The Rachmaninoff String Quartet No. 1 has all of those really great qualities of Rachmaninoff, that you want to whistle the tunes, the wonderful melodies. For me as a programmer, I thought that what's perhaps most striking about the Rachmaninoff is the influence of one of Rachmaninoff's teachers that is very apparent in this work, and that's Arensky. I like to think over entire seasons, of course, and the connection of Tchaikovsky to the Arensky that we have heard in the previous program. Now we have Rachmaninoff, a 20th century composer, although very romantic. writing a string quartet that very much seems to be in the style of Arensky's quartet we heard on the previous program. Mm. So it's an atmospheric and lovely piece, and it kind of gives you this sense that you're almost within a crystal goblet or a fishbowl or something, where you're kind of wrapped up in this wonderful harmonic texture. It's interesting to note, though, that he wrote this piece. He was born in 1873. He wrote this as a student piece, but at the end of his life, he had not yet given permission for it to be published. It was premiered at the Moscow Conservatory very early on by faculty members, but when he died in 1943, the piece remained unpublished and basically unknown. So in 1947, just 4 years after his death, it was then republished, or published for the first time, I should say, and has become a staple of the chamber music repertoire and something that musicians like our ASO quartet members wanted to play. The Jean-Emile Paul Cross selection, his quintet.
Okay,
yes.
Slow down.
Uh-huh.
Who is Cross?
Okay, so Cross is a late 19th century, early 20th century French composer, but perhaps as well known outside of musical and aesthetic circles, as a very successful career naval officer. He actually, as a naval commander, he served with great distinction in the Adriatic campaign during World War I. And perhaps had he been British, he might have been known in that category of what some people might describe as like a dilettante composer. But in fact, he wrote really fantastic works, particularly for little salon ensembles, flute works, and is a real great proponent of that kind of salon, earliest 20th century French style that one would come to associate people like Debussy and Ravel in their small chamber works. They're very colorful. They're very they're influenced by wonderfully undulating kind of textures. His native Brittany is very much on display in the way he writes. I mean, you can absolutely sense the sea. You sense his personal experiences of the sea, and for me, there's all these kind of connections to Debussy and the notion of waves and undulating textures. It also helps that he has written for these combinations of instruments that are particularly well suited for that kind of color palette. So his quintet that we're going to hear is written for harp, flute, viola, and cello. And violin. And the harp and the flute really are the dominant voices in the texture. It's really harp, flute, and strings. And it's just, the color palette is just exquisite. And it's a four-movement work, not tremendously long, but four very contrasting colors and textures of movements.
So that sounds like a very rich Paula. but
bright and clear, as if you can kind of see through it.
So to end with Mozart, does that sort of bring it to a very satisfying close to have him on the program where Rachmaninoff and Cross, as you've described him, have such colorful approach?
Well, I think it works for the reason that Rachmaninoff has a greater density and lushness of romantic language, which is then kind of distilled a little bit or clarified with just going a few years, going a little bit west, you might say, in a similar time period with the French of Cross. But then we distill it even further back to its kind of roots and DNA of the classical style. And for me, actually, French repertoire of that period works really, really well with Mozart. And Rachmaninoff, as long as it's not the really big, lush Rachmaninoff, also has an interesting kind of connection because of his compositional lineage and also his sensibility, I think, as a composer in terms of structure and form. And what we also do, and the reason why the Mozart is last, whereas you might expect the oldest thing to be earlier on the program, this is the largest work on the program. It's a six-movement work, and it's scored for oboe, two horns, two violins, viola, and double bass. It's a divertimento that has a grandeur to it. It's a work that musicians of multiple instruments have requested, but it's a particular favorite of horn players. The horn lines are very prominent, and there's a sense of event there's a sense of kind of spectacle with a great Mozart divertimento. And for me, there's just this pageantry of this particular divertimento, sense of event, and that's why it's at the end of the program. It's a great triumphant fun piece.
Now the next River Rhapsody is number 5, Texture of Sound Theme. Okay, so you've got one very familiar name, composer Mendelssohn. You have a marimba, which you've not had on a River Rhapsodies before, and it wasn't Down a River of Time. The name alone demands definition.
Yeah, I really, really like this program. I think it's a good example of the familiar, the unfamiliar, and the new. We have Mendelssohn's String Quartet No. 3 in D Major, Opus 44, No. 1, and that is an exuberant, effervescent, bubbly kind of piece. It has a character of joy and love and vacation, and it sounds like the perkiest parts of Midsummer Night's Dream. It's a work that it will absolutely put a smile on your face. The musicians requested it, and you have to almost be careful where you put a piece like that, because it is so ebullient that you really have to be careful what you put with it. Otherwise, it doesn't things won't quite taste right. And what I've decided to do is put that at the beginning of the program with the intermission to follow. So people should be going into intermission ready for a glass of wine and in great spirits. We follow that up with a work by Eric Owazin titled Down a River of Time. It also has a subtitle, which is Concerto for Oboe and Strings. But really, it's not so much a concerto in the classical sense of the word concerto. It just is a work for strings that features a solo voice, and that being oboe. It was a work that was written in 1997, and it's Eric is an American composing voice. He has roots in the Juilliard School and is quite popular with the wind world. Lorraine Dussault, who will be featured as the oboe soloist on this, our second oboe player in the symphony, requested this, and has actually requested it several years in a row. And it's just an exquisite work of kind of subtle shadings of color and beauty, and there's a melodiousness to it. But there's also an emotional intensity, and there's kind of this intimacy of personal feelings that are orchestrating, I think, what the composer might have described as the importance of life's dreams. What seems to be an unnamed voice in this work is the character of time and how time holds it together, and how you seem to almost be collaborating with this notion of time as we proceed down this river. So it's a work of texture and color, but there's an emotional intensity that seems quite poignant because of the color and sound of the oboe. You know, oboe is an instrument that can really ride two different sides of an equation. It can have a power almost akin to a trumpet, but it can also have a vibration and a rawness that seems more akin to a string instrument like the cello or a violin in terms of range, that is more evocative of the human voice. So there's this power, but also this singing nature that seems to just draw you in. I think this matches really well with the Mendelssohn. And then the piece on the program that will be completely unknown to everyone is a new work. In fact, it is untitled at this time. It's not quite finished. It was written by Charles Hawthorne, who is a very young composer, is born in 1984, and it features Blake Taylor, our principal percussionist, on marimba. And what you end up hearing, a sonorous beauty that becomes increasing in its complexity, but not necessarily in the complexity harmonically. It's just in the complexity of the number of voices that will be happening simultaneously. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be an interesting way to end the program that should be fun at the beginning with the Mendelssohn, and then we'll go through a very poignant time with the Owazin, and then we're going to finish again with some unabashed fun with video game music being played by one of our real stars of the orchestra. It was important to me that we feature Blake, because he hasn't had an opportunity to really be on our River Rhapsody program, and he's just one of the greatest additions to the symphony in a long time. And I also was thinking about the fact that we have one of the greatest instruments in the world here in Arkansas. Doug DeMauro, who is one of our percussionists in the section, is also known as perhaps the greatest marimba maker in the world. And he has his magnum opus still located here in the state, and we'll be featuring that instrument with Blake as a soloist. And so it really actually connects some people that aren't on stage but are still connected to the ASO. So the final program is going to be the week of our Composer of the Year residency. So while we have already heard one work of Adam Schoenberg, but he'll be here working with our musicians and preparing his work Slow Mo on this program, which is for strings. It's a very short work. It's slow. It's dark. It's melancholic. It is evocative of those most quintessential and kind of idiomatic string works of the 20th century. You think of something like the Barber Adagio. It's a very different side of Adam. I thought it was important for us to show this work because we've had these rip-roaring, fast-paced, kind of fun works of his, but this shows a more introspective, a slower work that will put us in a different mental state. Yeah. So the Rockefeller Quartet will be featured on this. You can perform this work as a quartet, mm-hmm. as a quintet, or as a string orchestra. Ah. Currently, what I'm thinking of doing is leaving it just as the Rockefeller Quartet featured on this. And we want to see how it works with the composer in his residency. We want to see what his preferences are. And based on that interaction and his own involvement, we'll see what the final mm-hmm. instrumentation is going to be. But right now, it's Rockefeller.
All right.
Now, when you talk to Schoenberg, when you talk to Adam about his influences, he will name all of the expected American composers, and he'll name the French influences. But he'll also, and I think this is striking for a young American composer, he'll name some of the real great classical masters like Mozart and Beethoven. And I think in some ways that's a brave thing to do. I'm mentioning it because that's one way for us to hear his music as being influenced by them, these great classical masters, but not just in the sound, but also in the form and structure. And it also gives us a little bit of a guide in terms of what repertoire works with his music. It's a nice hint at what programming might sound right next to it. The other works on this program sound a little bit like a mishmash. And that's one of the reasons why we've put two different works of Beethoven on this program other than this next to Schoenberg. In fact, one of them is Beethoven. The other is just half Beethoven, let's just say. So we've got his string quartet number 8, opus 59, number 2, also with Rockefeller Quartet. And this is one of his late quartets. It's a magnum opus. It's a great work. It has all of the things that are come to be synonymous with a big Beethoven quartet. You have the large textures, the virtuosity in the first violin part. It has the grand, complicated development sections, the incredibly energetic playing from second violin and viola that kind of infuse everything with that fire and that rhythmic. There are works that are beloved by music lovers, you know, by chamber music aficionados, but by musicians and quartets, these are also seen as the works that they get to sink their teeth into. This is the work that, you know, they'll be thinking about all year as an achievement, as something for them to be working towards. It'll be a work that they're also going to take movements out of and share with our young people as part of their demos as they take around the state. Mm-hmm. But anytime you take one of our quartets and give them a great masterpiece of Beethoven, you'll know that this is a highlight of the season for them.
Arkansas Symphony Music Director, Conductor Philip Mann, with details of the 2017-18 River Rhapsody series. I wish I had room for the history and stories behind the music and characters that Philip spills with such delight. The first concert in the series, October the 3rd, features Jennifer Frauci, this year's Artist of Distinction, chosen each season by Philip and given an award by K. Kelly Arnold in memory of her husband, Richard Shepherd Arnold. All performances are at 7 p.m. in the Great Hall, Clinton Presidential Center. For tickets and more information, call 501-666-1761 or visit arkansasymphony.org. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.